The terminology alone can be daunting. You've got standing committees, interim study committees, and committees of one, vehicle bills, engrossed bills, and enrolled acts, quorums, conferees, and concurrences, not to be confused with concurrent resolutions. And then there are all those odd-sounding phrases such as adjourn, sine die, move the previous question, and strip an insert, which may or may not mean anything close to what you think it means. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and this week on Indiana Lawmakers, we'll be talking to some of the General Assembly's newest members. Has the General Assembly become as hyper-partisan and downright nasty as some critics suggest? Well, this year's freshmen, all Republicans, fundamentally tip the General Assembly's ideological scales. And is a part-time legislature made up of people with other jobs still the best way to handle the complexities of government in the 21st century? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
As I mentioned in the opening, even if they've worked in government before, most newcomers to the General Assembly have to learn a whole new language and a whole new way of doing things, a way that doesn't always match what they remember from high school civics class. They have to weigh policy and politics, interact with lobbyists, colleagues, and constituents, and of course, keep in mind that the next election is never too far off. Here to offer their perspectives are two freshman lawmakers and one retired lawmaker who went from the backbench to leadership during his decade at the State House. Joining me are Republican Representative Cindy Kirkhofer of Beech Grove, Republican Representative Heath Van Adder of Kokomo, and former Republican Representative David Yount, who represented the Columbus area from 1996 to 2006, and during that time he served as Republican Whip, Assistant Republican Floor Leader, and Assistant Republican Caucus Chair. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, John. I guess, first of all, disclaimers. We should get this out of the way. People say, we're the Democratic freshmen. We can point out that there are no Democrats among the 24 freshmen in this session of the General Assembly. All 19 freshmen in the House and all five freshmen in the Senate are Republicans. So hence our panel here today. Cindy Kirkhofer, let's start with you. You wanted this job. You sought this job. What's the biggest surprise now that you have it?
Well, the biggest surprise is obviously the walkout this early. I expected some concerns later in the session, but really wasn't prepared to have this so early.
So that's...
It's a surprise.
Well, okay, let's see what your biggest surprise is so far.
I guess I would have to agree with Cindy that the walkout's definitely the biggest surprise that I've seen.
And we should say you're kind of a quasi-freshman, right? Because you're the odd duck in that you served for a few months in District 38 back in 2008 after there was a shift and Jeff Drozda moved out of state, Senator Jeff Drozda. Jim Buck took his seat. You took that seat. And then through slating and slope forward, you did not run. Are you treated differently because you were held back a year, so to speak, as a freshman, or... does that change the dynamic?
No, I'm still considered a freshman, so.
So that's you get backbencher like everybody else. David, yeah, you of course you've been there, done that.
Right.
You moved from the backbench to leadership, as I pointed out. When you took office the first time, what was your big surprise?
The big surprise for me was when I was running in 1996, the Republicans had a fairly comfortable but thin majority. And so I expected that if I were able to win my seat, that I would be able to serve in the majority and have the opportunity to maybe be a committee chair or at least be able to advance some of the bills that we had drafted. But on election night, we found that for the second time in history, we were 50-50. And since Governor O'Bannon won the governor's race that year over Steve Goldsmith, he was the tiebreaker. And so I began that night, I guess, in the minority for 8 of the 10 years that I was there. And so, like I say, expecting going in, being in the majority and finding out that the next 8 years I was going to watch a succession of Democratic chairmen of different committees, it was a big surprise for us.
Now, the two folks you're sitting with today, they, of course, are part of a class of 24. Your class was smaller, six.
In fact, exactly.
I believe the affectionate term and the nickname was the six-pack,
six
right?
Exactly.
So you were one of the six-pack. How did that change when you have less clout as a freshman? Does that change how you were treated, do you think, or your path to leadership when you're a much smaller group of freshmen?
It really didn't, for whatever reason. We had a pretty good group, you know, people from fairly diverse backgrounds. And the thing that's great about a citizen legislature is that you find your colleagues really leaning on the expertise that you bring from different areas. And our group was certainly no exception. And so I think that was helpful to us to be able to have some people that had some expertise in some areas that was beneficial to our caucus and to the body as a whole. So I think that was helpful.
That notion of in-house expertise and places to turn for advice, we've seen that manifested this session with House Speaker Brian Bosma assigning basically a mentor, I believe, to all of the freshmen. How has that worked out for you, Cindy Kirkhoff, for having somebody, a veteran lawmaker, who is, in theory at least, guiding you through the process?
It's wonderful. However, I have two mentors. My official mentor is Representative Frizzell, and so he's geographically close to me. We're both in Perry Township in the Indianapolis area, and I've known him for many years. But I also have an unofficial mentor, which is former Representative Larry Buell, who knows my district very well. So I'm able to call Representative Buell on occasion and ask him his advice and guidance, as well as rely on Representative Frizzell.
And he's still trying to get you to restore one class basketball.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That was, for those who have been around for a while, that was one of Larry Buell's passions, was keeping a single class basketball. Heath Van Adder, the same question. Has the mentor process worked well for you?
Yes. Representative Stuart Wald is my mentor, and he's helped me a great deal. But also, I feel like everybody's a mentor. I mean, everywhere you turn, there's somebody there to help you. Anytime you have a question, there's a senior legislator willing to help you.
So, and that, it seems to me that would be part of the learning curve, is where you can turn for advice that you can count on and is reliable. And that could be veteran lawmakers, that could be former lawmakers, that could be, I suppose, lobbyists. We know it's not the media. No one turns to the media for advice. But I mean, how do you decide who you can trust basically and who you can't?
I just trust the senior members. I mean, they've been there, they've done it, so I turn to them for the advice. And if you would like, I could start calling you for some advice.
Well, just watch. Every week we'll get you the times, both the show and, of course, week in review. We'll let you watch both of them. David Yount, what would be the advice you would give them now that you've been out of the process for a while, but after 10 years in it? What's the one bit of wisdom you would impart?
One of my favorite expressions was, those people that think they have all the answers just haven't heard all the questions. And it's important to kind of always be able to kind of seek out additional information. You know, even if you think you're going in on a particular issue really feeling like you've got a pretty good understanding of it, it's really beneficial to seek out other points of view as well. And if nothing else, just to make sure that you're testing, you know, your commitment to that issue. And that's the one thing, I guess, that I would really recommend. A lot of times it's difficult to feel like you're going off the reservation if the majority of the people in your caucus, so the majority of people, maybe even in your district, feel strongly about an issue. You know, it's up to you to do your homework. You know, do your own homework. Don't rely on others to do that. And you know, you've gotten elected to this position. Obviously, you've taken that kind of advice heretofore. And so, you know, I've got every confidence that these folks will be able to do that and be effective legislators.
Well, let's jump into the headlines. You both mentioned the walkout was the biggest surprise you've encountered thus far, so let's go to the headlines. As we tape this, of course, most members of the Democratic House Caucus are still enjoying the hospitality of the Comfort Inn in Urbana, Illinois. They, of course, walked out last week in a dispute over the so-called right-to-work legislation, which would bar employees from being forced to join unions or pay union dues. Some are saying that the stage for that walkout was set by some of the freshmen who didn't listen, perhaps, to the governor, who said, this is not something we need to deal with. This is a very, very combustible issue, a fiery issue. We don't want to deal with it. It wasn't on Senator David Long, the Senate President Pro Tem's agenda, or on Brian Bosma, the House Speaker's agenda. But yet, there were a lot of freshmen who said, we want to tackle this. Are you to blame?
I wasn't one of them. I have to be very cautious in my district because it's very rich with diversity. So when we're talking right to work, I have Amtrak in my district. I have Navistar. I have the former Ford Visteon plant. I have a lot of public safety personnel, and I have a lot of teachers. So I have to be very cautious and tread lightly when we're talking right to work. So I didn't really have a lot of verbose discussion with constituents because that wasn't an issue in my district. My district is more economic blight and education reform.
Well, then let me put you on the spot. Do you have some sympathies for your Democratic colleagues who felt compelled to walk out over this issue?
No, I don't have sympathies. I feel like I understand being compelled to do something, but you should be compelled to sit down and work through things on the House floor, deliberate. That's what we're supposed to do.
And Heath and Adder, you had during your campaign, your successful campaign, a lot of backing from groups such as the Chamber of Commerce, which is a group that has clearly been behind this push for right-to-work legislation.
Yeah.
How important was this issue to freshmen overall in the Republican caucus? And if, I guess the cliche question, if people knew now or then what they know now in terms of bringing the whole process to a screeching halt, is that still something that freshmen would have pushed for?
I don't think it was just the freshmen. I think we decided as a caucus, and there's obviously not everybody agreed, but overall, I come from a heavily union town too. I mean, Kokomo, Chrysler, and GM. But the discussion should have taken place. I mean, it should have taken place on the House floor. That's where, you know, the Democrats should be there to discuss it. If it wasn't a viable thing for Indiana, we could have voted it down, but with them not being here, I think that was the real problem.
Now, there was a meeting of sorts, a one-hour negotiation this week where Pat Bauer, who leads the Democratic caucus, came and met in an open-door session with cameras rolling and so forth and cameras clicking away with Brian Bosma. If you had had an opportunity to talk directly or if I could pull out a phone and say, here, Pat Bauer's on the other end, what would you tell him?
Tell them to get back to work. I mean, it's what they were elected to do.
Simple as that.
It's disappointing that the process can't take place like it should.
Well, David, now your perch is away from the process. You're in the investment business now, so you can sort of step away and see it all in a crystal clear fashion, right?
Oh,
what do you make of this impasse?
It's not surprising, I guess, to me. Number one, the Republicans in the House had a very aggressive agenda, and I understand that because I think that they have only been in the majority, I think, three times in the last 25 or 30 years. And so they haven't had many opportunities to advance causes that they feel that are particularly important. And so you really have to resist the temptation to try to do it all at once. In 1995, when the Republicans had retaken the majority, they had a very ambitious agenda that quite frankly cost them in the next election. And they found themselves back in the minority. And so it is a cautionary tale. But again, I also understand, those folks that have been on the outside looking in for so many years that now have that opportunity to chair committees and advance bills, and they should be given that right. We kind of stood back in the 8 out of the 10 years that I was in the minority. We had an awful lot of things rammed down our throats that we weren't particularly happy about. But as an elected representative, you do. You take up your debates on the floor, you have your discussions on the floor, and you cast your ballots. And you understand that there are going to be times when you're going to come up short. But you should stand your ground on the floor and make your position known. So I wish the House Democrats hadn't voted with their feet. I'm not certain this will be the last time this session that they do that. I think redistricting will be another opportunity for them to see that if they can kind of disrupt the process, that maybe they can keep their old seats as opposed to having newly drawn seats, which will clearly favor Republicans. So, like I said, I think it'll be interesting because I don't think this will be the last time you'll see them taking a powder.
Well, it clearly is a highly charged atmosphere this session, and some would say that things over the years have gotten more partisan, that the tensions run higher, that the rancor is more significant. I know I first went to the State House as a reporter in 1988, and I would say that things were more collegial probably back then. The notion that yeah, we can fight a vigorous debate on the floor, but then retire to a card game or a drink or a game of checkers or whatever your choice.
I believe it was. Euchre.
Euchre, okay, that's it. Afterward. Cindy Kirchhofer, as a freshman, how would you gauge the political temperature right now? Is it a nasty atmosphere?
My personal experience is no. Here at the State House, we've started to bond with some of the, as a freshman legislator, we've started to make friendships and partnerships across the aisle, and I'm disappointed that that process has stopped temporarily. So, no, and when you look at our voting, often we vote 90 to 10 or 95, you know, to 4 or 5. So we often are very like-minded. It's just on a few key issues that you see us go to polar opposites. But generally, we really roll our sleeves up and work together.
Heath Van Adder, is that your take as well? Has that been your experience?
Yeah. We started building relationships with them across the aisle, and I was starting to enjoy that, and now they're no longer around to do that. So camaraderie's kind of gone away.
Well, one thing that Brian Bosma, House Speaker, was trying to do, or said he was trying to do this year, was create a more bipartisan atmosphere. He had two Democratic committee chairs. He had some other reform proposals. He limited the number of bills that could be introduced to 10 per House member, cameras in all of the committee rooms. Every speaker comes in with some reform ideas. If you could pretend you're speaker, we'll go ahead and fast forward the clock here, and you're all speaker. What kind of reforms would you want to see, David Young?
You know, I think Brian's done an excellent job. I think that knowing that the Democrats were going to have some real concerns about coming into such an overwhelming majority that, quite frankly, neither party had enjoyed. In recent memory, I think his reaching out and allowing two of their members to be committee chairs, I think, was important. I think kind of keeping with the old adage that sunlight is the best disinfectant. I think the idea of having more exposure to the internet and more publicity for committee hearings and that sort of thing, where the kind of the workhorse load of everything is done in the General Assembly. I can't take issue with anything that he's done. I think he's been spot on with some of those reforms, and I'm sure there will be others to come. But I think that's an excellent start.
Any reforms that we'll start with you, Heath Van Adder, that you would like to see take place during your tenure in the House?
Being new, I've still got to look into stuff like that. But I know. I think it's safe to say the caucus is behind Brian and everything he's doing. He's done a great job as our leader, and we're behind him 100%.
And not necessarily a referendum on Brian Bosma, but is there anything you'd like to see changed in the process and the way things are done fundamentally?
No, I agree. I've been fortunate enough to work with Speaker Bosma on the legal side because I'm involved with my local community and have served on a redevelopment commission, so he's served as our counsel. He's an admirable man. What I enjoy about his leadership is that it's not by dictatorship. It's literally consent. So we, as a caucus, come together, vet things, and the majority generally takes the what do I want to say? The majority takes
They
charge. How's that? Yes.
If we put out a list of possible reforms, some of which would require changes in law, if not the Constitution, the granddaddy of them all, of course, would be, and I'm not saying anybody here necessarily is advocating this, a change to a full-time legislature as opposed to a part-time citizen legislature. Any merit for that in this 21st century? I mean, the issues that you all deal with and that you, David Young, used to deal with are arguably a lot more complex than what was dealt with in the, middle 1800s.
Right.
Is it
right? No question about that. I think that instead of maybe having a full-time legislature, I'm still fond of the idea of a citizen legislature. I like the idea of people again bringing those their life experiences to bear on the process. I can't tell you how many times that we would have a caucus meeting or have a debate on the floor of the House where somebody who had some, you know, very specific information because it was a career that they had was able to sway a debate. I think that's incredibly important. The one thing I guess maybe I would encourage is maybe additional staff. I don't know that we need to have full-time legislators, but maybe have additional staff so that they have additional resources. When I left, and I'm sure it's not too dissimilar today, you had one legislative assistant that was serving six different legislators, and that's an incredibly difficult task. And so if you could kind of change that up a little bit and give them more of an opportunity to kind of spend time on research and kind of help you sort out issues, as well as the folks with the Legislative Services Agency, which help with bill drafts and financial analysis of different bills. If we could give ourselves some more help in that area, I really think that that would serve the legislators and would serve the state and our constituents very well.
Van Atter, do you think 4 months during budget years and 2 months in the years in between is enough, or would you like to be here 12 months a year?
No. I think if you look at the states who have full-time legislatures like California, they're there too long. That we need to be sent home to take a break from creating more laws. So, I think a part-time legislature is the way to go. We have to go back and live by the same laws that we create and in our businesses. And like I said, we get to bring our ideas and our life experiences to the table. And I think that's the way it should stay.
Another thing people sometimes bring up, of course, is the notion of term limits. Even though we've had a lot of turnover in the House, certainly, I think 45 out of 100 members are either first or second year. This is the 30th year of Indiana lawmakers. If we have you back for the 40th year, I'm not saying I might be in this chair, but would you still be an active House member, or would you be retired like David Young?
If you continue to serve your district and serve it well, I think that you have a rich life in politics. I think what I hear a lot, and when I was campaigning, is that people do would like to see term limits only because they feel that their lawmakers are stagnant. So, you know, as long as you're out there working, doing good for your community, I don't mind seeing longevity in political careers.
So we can book you all here and now for the 40th
sure.
Year show. We'll talk to your agents. We'll get that on inked before you leave the studio here. Thank you all very much for this discussion. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Cindy Kirchhofer of Beech Grove, Republican Representative Heath Van Atter of Kokomo, and former Republican Representative David Yount, who represented the Columbus area from 1996 to 2006. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we look at the massive jigsaw puzzle game known as redistricting. To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week, I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, you're anything but a freshman. What surprised you about the conversation, the roundtable, with, I guess they weren't all freshmen, but two freshmen and our retiree?
I think we heard a great deal about how the learning curve was kind of disrupted by the Democratic walkout this session, and I think that kind of made this session a little bit stranger for these freshmen than it would have already have been, and it made it a little bit more difficult for them to kind of get into the regular flow of things, because as you know, things really change at the midpoint of the session, and it's a lot different when you've got these deadlines and all these second reading amendments and third reading votes on really critical issues to deal with, and than it is to just kind of go through the regular kind of slog of committee meetings and quick second reading votes on things that don't really make a whole lot of difference.
So when you get to the second half, when you hate to say when things really count, but I guess that's one way to put it, do freshmen have the luxury of still being the inexperienced freshmen, or is it time for them to step up?
Oh, they will have the luxury of time during the second half, and that's something that I don't know that they quite understand at this point. It would be very interesting to have them back at the end of the session and to see how they saw the first half versus the second half, assuming that we do really have a regular kind of second half of this session, because things are so different in the final weeks of any session. And you typically will see the real legislative veterans get appointed to the conference committees and do the real work. And quite frankly, the freshmen, some of the other younger members are going to be shut out of everything. They will just be told, okay, well, show up for caucuses and the quorum calls and be there when we need your votes on these things for concurrences and third readings, because at the end, it's really going to be the veterans that are going to be shaping these things. And, you know, I hate to say it, but the freshmen are just going to be there for their votes.
Well, again, I think that's certainly valid, but we talked to I talked with them about the walkout and the suggestion, the conventional wisdom that the freshmen largely caused that because they didn't want to necessarily listen to the governor or their leadership in the House and Senate. Do they deserve some blame for this walkout?
Well, I think that there was certainly some freshman overreaching. You know, it was not part of the governor's agenda to do right to work, as you pointed out, the speakers, the Senate President pro tems. And the freshmen in the House really forced the issue. The question is whether they will feel so frustrated toward the end at being left out again that they may try to overreach in their own way again. I don't think that that will happen. I think that the opportunities are a little bit less for that to happen toward the very end, and I don't think that you will see anything resembling that.
And again, as I asked during the roundtable, there are a whole lot more of them now than there were, say, when David Yount started. There were only six. Now there are 24. Does that change the dynamic? Do they have... They're a bigger voting block now. They have people have to listen to them.
Absolutely, and we saw that that is exactly what happened with Right to Work. So it's a different situation for them than it was when Dave came in 96 as part of the six-pack. This is a 19-pack in the House.
Closer to a keg, but we'll leave those metaphors for another day. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. Take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.